This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the fourth weekend of December 2018. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Gus Garcia, the first elected Hispanic mayor of Austin, dies at 84.
He had this great intuition to recognize the potential in any individual.
Governor Greg Abbott says he might offer Texans an alternative to Obamacare.
Really complicated. There are a lot of moving parts. And again, it would take a lot of money.
And our listeners tell us what they think it means to be a real Austinite.
I think you can call yourself a real Austinite when the city that you fell in love with no longer exists.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend.
You know, he really was one of our civic giants. He brought equity and access issues to the forefront.
That's Austin Mayor Steve Adler speaking about former Austin Mayor Gus Garcia, who died earlier this week. Garcia was many firsts, the first Hispanic trustee to serve on the school board, the first elected Hispanic mayor of Austin. His family is arranging a private funeral. Next month, there will be a public memorial. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has this remembrance of the man.
In 1972, Garcia won his first election to the Austin Independent School District Board of Trustees. He called his father to tell him the news.
First question that he asked is, how much do they pay for this job? I said, no, Dad, this is a volunteer job.
Garcia told this story to his friend Paul Saldana in 2012 as part of an oral history project.
And how many hours do you have to work? I said, we work about 25, 30 hours a week. What? And when do you work to make money to feed your family? I said, well, don't worry, Dad, we're doing okay. No.
Garcia's dad could not understand why his son would work for free. He told him as much, using a word in Spanish that, well, if I'm being polite, translates to stupid.
He said, you know what? You're more pendejo than I thought you were. And hung up on me.
Garcia's friends called him humble. He was born in a small town and moved to Laredo as a kid. Garcia came to Austin in 1957 to go to UT. After he graduated, he opened his own accounting firm. According to Saldana, Garcia was the first Mexican-American CPA in Austin. In 1972, voters elected him to the school board. That's when his dad had some choice words for him. Garcia served 5 years on the AISD board. And according to newspaper articles, Garcia fought to hire more minority teachers. He also opposed opening a new school in Southwest Austin, afraid it would encourage white families to leave more diverse schools in the city's northeast. Saldana says Garcia was a mentor not just for him, but many others.
Gus was very stern and very intimidating, just, you know, strong voice. But his vulnerability was always young people. He had this just great intuition to recognize the potential in any individual and then help them to make the best use of the abilities and skills that they did have.
Hi, Mr. Garcia. How could I get a job with you? That's literally the first question I asked him.
And old.
Yeah, I was pretty direct.
Lonnie Limon was 13 years old when he first approached Garcia for a job. He says, growing up in Austin in the 1980s, there weren't a whole lot of Hispanic leaders to look up to.
And I was so happy to meet somebody that was influential I wouldn't even say influential, somebody who was successful. It showed you kind of what you wanted to be, right?
Garcia won a seat on the Austin City Council in 1991. He eventually hired Limon as an intern in his office. During his time on council, Garcia took part in some big decisions for Austin. In the mid-90s, Garcia's vote tipped a council divided over whether to appeal a legal challenge to the city's newly adopted Save Our Springs ordinance. That's a law that limits development in Southwest Austin with the intent of protecting local water sources. The vote meant the ordinance would eventually survive a lawsuit and remain intact. Saldana says Garcia was an environmentalist voice on the council.
He was talking about the importance of mass transportation and looking at alternatives, recognizing that from an environmental perspective, that, you know, getting people out of cars and looking at alternative ways of getting people throughout the city.
Garcia was elected mayor in 2001. He was Austin's first elected Hispanic mayor. He served only 2 years before retiring from public service. 4 years later, AISD named a school after him, what's now the Gus Garcia Young Men's Leadership Academy. On Monday, 10 students stood outside the school to honor Garcia. They recited the school's creed.
I look good. I feel good. I am a Gus Garcia man.
Limon, Garcia's old intern, says he remembers a time when Garcia took a trip to Spain. He came back excited about the culture. He told Limon,
when the Spanish say goodbye, they don't say hasta luego. They don't say, if you're sending a friend off, like, vaya con Dios or whatever, they say, enhorabuena.
Literally, in good hour. I did some internet searching and talked to a friend who lived in Spain, and I couldn't confirm this. It seems like enhorabuena in Spain is a formal way of wishing someone congratulations, not necessarily goodbye. But sometimes rituals among friends take on their own meanings.
That became our thing. He would always say, you know, Lonnie, hope you're doing well. Enhorabuena, Gustavo.
Garcia died early Monday at home with family by his side. He was married, had 3 kids and 5 grandkids.
So when I wrote my little post about him, I said, enhorabuena, you know, I love you, sir. We'll miss you.
In retirement, Garcia played in a band. Here he is singing in that band. Gus Garcia was 84 years old. Audrey McGlynn Shee, KUT News.
Williamson County commissioners voted unanimously this week to provide economic incentives to Apple on behalf of Williamson County taxpayers. That was the sound of a pretty packed commissioners' court meeting right after the vote was taken. KUT's Jimmy Moss was there watching it all go down. Hi, Jimmy.
Hello.
What is in this incentives package for Apple?
Basically, Apple gets a rebate. Now, this is a rebate over 15 years. They will pay all of their taxes up front to the county of Williamson. Once they meet certain criteria over time, whether that's 2 years, they have to have provided 600 jobs for the county, little steps along the way, they will then get a rebate, a grant. They call it officially a grant back from the county. And they will then get some of that back. That could, in total, over 15 years, be 65% of what they would owe, which is substantial. That's going to be a lot of money. In effect, they would get, roughly speaking, $13.5 million, according to conservative estimates of what the property would be worth and what the development would be worth with the buildings and all of that stuff. So Apple would in effect get a benefit of more than $13 million.
For those who may have missed the announcement last week, what is Apple promising in return?
So they are promising a $1 billion investment into an area of the county, which is really on the edge. It's on the Travis County, Williamson County line.
In the city of Austin though, right?
In the city of Austin. In Round Rock ISD, so it kind of crosses all of these boundaries and borders.
Yeah.
It's only a mile away from Apple's other large campus that they built 6 years ago down Palmer Lane. What they are promising is $1 billion. Over time, they want one building up within 3 years. So that's a pretty quick ramp up. And they want 5,000 employees in that building around that same time. So this is a pretty quick injection of people, capital, and all of that. Right now, it is a ranch, 133 acres of ranch land, craggy hill country land. Relatively speaking, because of agriculture exemptions and whatnot in Texas land code, right now it's only netting the county $70-something dollars a year.
For that whole 133-acre tract?
Correct.
You asked Williamson County Judge Dan Gaddis about a big concern we've heard, affordability. Will this make Wilco a less affordable place for people to live? I want to play some of what he said to you.
My assumption is that the tax rate of Williamson County will go down. Whether or not it'll go down enough to make up for the increase in value. We lowered our tax rate, Williamson County tax rate went down this last year. the average taxpayer is still paying $20 or so more a year than they were before. I mean, because values have gone up. That's a concern. The concern is these employees will live well. Will the rest of the employees in the county and in this area be able to afford housing and so forth?
Not a huge reassurance there from Williamson County Judge Dan Gaddis.
No, and this is a calculus that Austin and Travis County taxpayers know well. I mean, the politicians have been trying to do this for a long time, kind of clutching gas on, you know, as property values go up, they try to lower the tax rate so that they will still net more money. But in the end, they can say we lowered taxes. So it's sort of a positive and a negative at the same time. Now this problem is encroaching upon Williamson County, which for a long time, you know, was seen as an affordable alternative. You could live in the Austin area, but, you know, you could go out there, get more house for the money, all of that stuff. You know, it's way too early to tell that, but it could be changing for Williamson County. And beyond affordability, I asked the judge, the county judge, if this could affect Williamson County's identity at its core.
Our identity is changing. I'm an agriculturist. My background is agriculture, and so I hate to see it leave, but, you know, one thing's interesting. They're building on land that if I really worked real hard, I could raise about 3 goats on an acre, you know. But it will change us, and it will affect the East. It'll affect the whole county before it's over with. I'm more concerned about affordability for those people that need a place to live, and it's something that this whole area is going to have to confront.
Now, tech is, of course, nothing new to Williamson County. One of the original tech companies that come to the Austin area, Westinghouse, came here. They built in Williamson County. Dell, you know, this is not new to them. But it does sort of change who might be moving to Williamson County over the next 15 years.
KUT's Jimmy Moss joining us to talk about Williamson County commissioners voting unanimously this week to provide economic incentives to Apple to develop a $1 billion campus in Williamson County. Jimmy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Austin Independent School District's Board of Trustees voted this week to rename Fulmore Middle School after a longtime social studies teacher, Sarah Beth Lively. KUT's Claire McInerney has more.
For more than a year, the board has considered changing the names of 5 district buildings named for Confederate figures: Fulmore Middle, Lanier, Reagan, and Eastside Memorial High Schools, and an administrative building called the Allen Center. The board only voted to change the name of Fulmore. Its new namesake, Sarah Beth Lively, is a former social studies teacher and journalism advisor. Many people spoke in favor of renaming the school after Lively. Derek Castillo, a former student, said she ignited an interest in journalism for him.
She instilled the love of writing, communicating well, and I took it all the way to get a degree at the University of Texas and practice journalism for my career.
The board voted in November to rename the Allen Center after Anita Coy, a former principal. There is no timeline for when the board will vote on the high schools. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
A speech pathologist in Round Rock is suing the Pflugerville Independent School District over a 2017 state law that requires her to pledge never to boycott Israel. KUT's Nadia Hamdan explains.
Bahia Amawi has been contracting with the school district for almost a decade. In September of this year, she received a state-mandated addendum to her contract that required an assurance that she will not boycott Israel. Amawi, whose family is Palestinian, refused to sign the addendum for moral reasons. The school district then terminated her contract. Gadir Abbas is a senior attorney for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. He says Amawi participates in a movement that calls itself Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS. It seeks to impose peaceful economic pressure on Israel to stop its settlement in Palestinian territory.
Whether or not you agree or disagree with BDS, everybody should agree that all Americans have the right to communicate views about matters of importance.
The law that bans the state from contracting with any entity that boycotts Israel was passed in 2017 with bipartisan support. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has praised the law, saying that, quote, any anti-Israel policy is an anti-Texas policy. Nadia Hamdan, KUT News.
Conservation groups say a rare Texas lizard could be heading toward extinction after the state removed a conservation plan aimed at helping it. As KUT's Moses Bushell reports, industry, conservationists, and the federal government have spent years trying to reach an agreement on how to save the Dunes sagebrush lizard.
The lizard lives smack dab in West Texas oil country, pitting its fate against the interests of one of America's most powerful industries. Rather than list the lizard as endangered in 2012, the Fish and Wildlife Department signed off on a state plan that sought voluntary conservation efforts from landowners and industry. When it became clear that wasn't working, Fish and Wildlife started reviewing a new conservation plan. That's prompted the Texas State Comptroller's Office to essentially cancel the old plan before the new one is finalized, says Chris Nagano, a scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity.
So now there's no protection.
Nagano says the Fish and Wildlife Department should introduce a new conservation plan or list the species as endangered. He says if the department doesn't act soon, it will face lawsuits from conservationists compelling it to. Moses Bushell, KUT News.
Well, last week, a federal judge in Texas ruled that the Affordable Care Act was unconstitutional, and then Governor Greg Abbott told the Dallas Morning News Texas would create its own healthcare system if that decision were upheld. It won't be that simple. KUT's Ashley Lopez spoke about it with KUT's Jennifer Staten.
Ashley, so first of all, let's review quickly. What did that federal judge's ruling actually mean?
This was a summary judgment. What he ruled doesn't really have real-world effects right now. So, you know, for someone who has an Obamacare plan that still stands, it's still useful, nothing is changing. So it's really just a ruling without an order. So it doesn't really change anything for now. This is all kind of hypothetical for the time being.
So Governor Abbott said that he would help create a health care plan in Texas to replace Obamacare if their ruling happens to be upheld. Is it possible for Texas to replace Obamacare?
Texas could come up with its own plan any day. They could have done this before Obamacare. They can do this now. States have used Obamacare funds to create their own healthcare marketplace. I mean, this is all possible, was possible before, is possible in the future. I talked to Stacey Pogue with the Center for Public Policy Priorities about this, and she said the bigger question is not whether this is even possible.
The much harder thing isn't the technical, can it be done? It's the political will. Would it be done? Is there leadership in the state that prioritizes health care? And I haven't seen it to date.
What's important here is that Texas has for a long time had a really high rate and a really high number of people without insurance. Right now, we are leading the nation in both. So healthcare advocates have been saying for a long time that Texas should do its own thing to increase healthcare coverage because this is a serious problem. And it hasn't happened yet. And there are some really big reasons as to why.
Well, Ashley, why then hasn't it happened yet?
Like Stacey Pogue mentioned, political will. There just hasn't been, you know, a momentum in the legislature to make stuff like that happen. And it takes a lot of money, and money requires political will. Like, to the two go hand in hand. So that's why we haven't gotten there yet.
So let's drill down now on some of the specific things that Governor Abbott said he would include in a new plan. So first, expanding insurance coverage to more people. How easy would it be for Texas to do that on its own?
Like I mentioned, it's very expensive. The bigger question here is, you know, like what mechanism you would use to expand coverage. There are more expensive ways to do it and cheaper ways to do it, but it's all a lot of money. And Stacey Pogue says there's another factor here that you have to consider.
It is much harder to make sure coverage is affordable at every income level, right? That takes funding. And the ACA had lots of funding to states to make coverage affordable for low-income citizens.
And so Pogue says in order to replicate what the Affordable Care Act had in place is really complicated. There are a lot of moving parts. And again, it would take a lot of money. This is going to be a reoccurring theme. It's just very expensive to make sure that people have access to affordable health care coverage.
Well, Ashley, one of the most popular provisions of the Affordable Care Act was coverage for pre-existing conditions. Does Governor Abbott's proposed plan have anything about pre-existing conditions in it?
Yeah, it does. And he says that he wants to ensure that people who have pre-existing conditions have access to health care. again, the bigger question is it affordable coverage? In the past, before the Affordable Care Act, the big issue is that people with pre-existing conditions would be priced out of a plan. It'd be too expensive for them, which makes it not very useful. You know, that's the whole point of health insurance. And so, and that is not clear whether or not the state has a plan to subsidize those health insurance plans, because again, that's really expensive.
All right. So Ashley, how would Governor Abbott pay for all of this? What did he say in his plan about payment?
He said he'd work with the Trump administration to get waivers. Like basically, you know, it's cutting a deal with the federal government to get a pot of money to pay for things. The problem is, and this is something that Stacey Pogue with the Center for Public Policy Priorities pointed out, is that some of those waivers that he mentioned are part of the ACA.
And the funding that would go into the waivers and the Affordable Care Act. So the idea that we'd have tools at our disposal to replace the Affordable Care Act if it went away is not very practical.
This is the very early stages of his plan. Like, obviously, this is stuff that would have to be worked out, and who knows what the Trump administration will come up with, but there's not a lot of clarity of how that would all work.
So, Ashley, you say early stages of Governor Abbott's plan. So what is the timetable for all of this? The federal judge in Texas made a ruling. Is the governor waiting for an appeal? What are we talking about as far as the timing of all of this?
That's a good question. He hasn't made it very clear. And as you know, there are a lot of complicating factors here. One, you never know when a federal judge is going to rule on something, including the federal appeals court. It could take forever. You know, some lawsuits here have taken years, almost a decade, to get sorted out in the courts. The legislature doesn't meet every year. So if they were to come up with a plan, it'd either have to be a special session if they want it to happen quickly, or they'd have to wait up to a year or more to come up with a plan. And three, you know, Greg Abbott could have a plan yesterday, but this is something that he hasn't talked about a lot. Healthcare is not something that he has made a key issue as governor. So from what I see, we're going to be starting at the jump. Like, this is the first step. And so who knows how long that will take.
KUT's Ashley Lopez, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
When you think about delivering your wish list to Santa, you might imagine heading to a mall, waiting in line, letting good old Kris Kringle know what you want for Christmas in person. But every holiday season for the last 12 years, kids in the West Texas town of Alpine have given their wish to Santa in a less conventional way. Marfa Public Radio's Carlos Morales reports.
This year, you might find Santa's Village, or something like it, in a retrofitted RV outside the True Value Hardware store in Alpine.
Hello, Santa. This is K5FD.
You won't find any reindeer inside. No tinsel or Christmas lights. Just a ham radio on a countertop. And that's how you talk to Santa.
Hello, hello again, Rob.
Rob Knutkin is the helper elf here, talking to the big man up north. He's with the Big Bend Amateur Radio Club. To get kids on the line with Kris Kringle, his group has set up a communication network they call SantaNet.
Hi, Santa.
Hello, Marcus. Tell me how old you are.
I'm 10 years old.
Oh, it's good to be 10, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Marcus Ramirez is here with his parents. He says talking to Santa was, well, like every kid's experience talking to Santa.
It was fun and kind of embarrassing.
He says delivering his wish list to Santa via ham radio was kind of weird and old-timey. He's never done it before, but he thinks maybe his dad has.
I don't think ham radio is quite as magical as it had been, say, 30 years ago. But nonetheless, it's a unique experience.
That's Rob Knutkin, the radio elf from earlier. For the last 12 years, Knutkin and the Amateur Radio Club have been doing this, getting kids like Marcus in touch with Santa.
And an ulterior motive always is if we get a new generation interested in continuing this legacy of amateur radio operation and public service and camaraderie that comes with it.
Ham radio works a lot like any other AM/FM broadcast you might pick up in your car or on your home stereo, except it operates on a different range of frequencies. you need a special radio to pick up the signal.
We can provide emergency communication where cell phone signals aren't available out in those areas.
Emergencies like the historic Rock House Fire. It burned more than 300,000 acres of West Texas grassland in 2011. At that time, the group helped relay messages about road closures and the location of the fire to emergency personnel. It can all be pretty serious, but today it's all about getting kids excited about ham radio and Santa Claus.
Anybody want to talk to Santa Claus on radio?
We all do, yes sir. All
righty.
By the end of the night, about 10 kids came through to visit Santa Claus, and I couldn't miss up my chance.
Hey, we have a big kid here. His name is Carlos Morales, and he's from Marfa Public Radio. And so I'm just showing him how we get a hold of Santa Claus.
Well, okay. Carlos, do you want to talk to Santa Claus?
So just hold that down.
Key that, Mike, when you're ready to talk, put it up close to your mouth.
Hi, Santa. Just wondering if I've been good enough. Am I on the good list here? That's my big question.
I'm not so sure about you. Are you going to straighten up for the rest of the year?
There's not a whole lot of time left before the end of the year, so I guess I better be good. In West Texas, I'm Carlos Morales.
A couple of weeks ago, we asked for your help as part of our AT Explained project. A listener named Sarah Edens had just moved to Austin about 6 months ago, and she wanted to know what she had to do to be a part of this city. Her question was, when can you call yourself a real Austinite? With your help, KUT's Matt Largy tried to find an answer.
Yikes. How are we going to answer this question? Well, I started with somebody I know who's lived in Austin for a long time. And I didn't have to go far.
Hi, I'm TK Largy.
Yes, that's my wife.
And I have lived in Austin for 26 years.
When I asked this question, I thought I was going to get a list, things to do, places to go, but that's not at all what happened.
I think you can call yourself a real Austinite when the city that you fell in love with no longer exists and you have to mourn it.
Whoa. That's, It's both sad and somehow uplifting at the same time. I don't know why. Explain what you mean.
I don't know. Like, the thing that makes me feel the most like an Austinite is the fact that I feel like my ghost is everywhere in the city. And when I travel around, there's like all these parts of me that are all over the different places. And as the city's grown so much, it's become more that the ghosts are so hard to find because they exist in buildings that aren't there anymore or have been replaced with other buildings. And you'll be surprised occasionally with like this feeling of loss for the Austin that's no longer there. But then there's, you know, the fun new things that the city has to offer and the joy and the surprises of the things that are still there. So it's kind of a mixed feeling. And I think that's the quintessential Austin thing. I think that's what makes you an Austinite.
There are a lot of people who can relate to that, that mixed feeling of nostalgia and joy. We heard a lot of that in the hundreds of answers we got when we asked everyone this question.
When can you call yourself a real Austinite? Well, I think you have to really show that you're along for the ride. First, you must have lived here for at least 10 years. And during your time here, you must have had at least two life-altering experiences. I'm Kerry Kimbrough, and I came here to go to graduate school and to join the UT Jazz Band. And now, after 45 years and several life-altering experiences, I'm still here. Bye-bye.
Hi, my name's Nicole Goad, G-O-A-D, and I would say you can call yourself an Austinite when you can pronounce the names of the streets correctly that we love to mispronounce in Austin. This would include Nanshack, Guad, and Burnett. Not Burnett, it's Burnett. Hi,
Hi, my name is Devin Aller, and I think you call yourself a real Austinite when you stop saying back home we used to, because Austin is your home.
Hi, my name is Neve Gray, and you can call yourself an Austinite after you develop the inevitable cedar, ragweed, mold allergy that we all eventually get.
I'm Nicole Wagner, and you know you're a true Austinite when you've been here long enough to refer to and reminisce about the old Antones. Whether it was on Burnett, old Antones on 29th and Guadalupe, old Antones on 5th and Lavaca, or new old Antones over by the new Emos.
Hi, my first name is Bianca. My last name is Castillo. I've lived in Austin for about 22 years now, and I remember it was probably about a week after I had moved here when I was 18. I was invited out to a music festival called Aquafest. And I arrived with my friend, and it was a beautiful, sunny, crisp day. There were bands playing, there was food everywhere, blankets spread out. People had their shoes off and were walking barefoot in the grass, and I took my shoes off. And for me, that was when I knew I wasn't going to go anywhere else, and I knew that I had finally found my place. And that's it. That's what I'd say. You have that moment where you know that you're an Austinite.
So my name is Rachel Farrig, and I've lived in Austin for a little over 11 years. I would say when you've lived here long enough that you've gotten some local experiences, you've done Zilker tree lighting, and you've done Eeyore's birthday, and you've gone to Mozart's, and you've kayaked Town Lake or Lady Bird Lake, when you can kind of speak, not so much with authority, but with a little bit of knowledge and be able to share why those experiences are important and, you know, how they make Austin what it is.
My name is Christopher Waters. I've been living in Austin since 1975. I grew up here. I've seen it change from a little city with a hippie hollow and a couple of bars on 6th Street and no skyline whatsoever to what it is today with a million or so people from everywhere. And to me, it's when you fall in love, when you come here, and if you leave to go back somewhere and you can't wait to get back to Austin, or if you're from here and you leave and go on a trip and all you can think about is getting back home to Austin.
So my name is Reverend Jarrell Wilson. I've been in the Austin area since 2005. Honestly, you're not a real Austinite until you fought a grackle for food. I've seen it happen at Trudy's. I've seen it happen at Torchy's, happen at Zilker Park. Grackles are, it's kind of like our trying fire is Austinite. If you don't know how to survive a grackle attack, you can't live here.
Well, I'm Cope Dilworth, and I'm one of those rarities around here. I'm a fourth-generation Austinite, and my children are a fifth. It's asking the question about who's really an Austinite is really very difficult. I came down with the idea that it was simply, if you really feel like you wouldn't want to live anywhere else, then by golly, you're an Austinite.
There's a kind of theme in all the answers that we got, a kind of nostalgia, a longing for the Austin that was, even if that Austin was only 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And bear with me here, I'm going to try something deep. Maybe, that feeling of being a real Austinite isn't a longing for what the city was, but who we were. A sense that we're part of a changing place and that we're changing along with it. We had someone answer this question along these lines, and it really stood out to me.
My name is Nisa Brown, and I have lived in Austin for 35 years, from when I was 2 to now.
She told me at first she wanted to say that you can't be a real Austinite unless you were born here.
You know, I talk about this all the time. People say to my husband, you know, are you from Austin? Are you from here? And he's always kind of like, yeah. Or I have been here for so long, I should be. And I roll my eyes and I'm like, no, you're not from Austin.
But then Nisa took a minute to think about it. And what she came up with was something I thought was really great. For her, it's about having a then and a now.
Well, I guess there's the then of Austin, what Austin looked like 20 years ago. That's one experience. But for me, the then is my experience, who I was, what my life was like. I have a memory of like having my first kiss on Town Lake, which is now Lady Bird Lake. And then years later, going for a hike with my, what was my fiance, and then going for a hike with my family. That's not something that anybody else really gets to see, but like the city gets to see all of this. Like the city is almost like a godlike figure in witnessing all of my life and all of the changes and growth and development in me.
What advice would you give to someone, you know, who maybe just showed up but really wants to be a part of the city, really wants to call themselves an Austinite? What would you say to them?
I mean, I guess you can't leave. You got to stay, and I don't think it's like a to-do list of all the things like you've got to go see or do or eat. I think it's about letting your life unfold in this city and letting the city be witness to those changes in you.
I guess if there's something to take away here, it's that maybe there is no yardstick for being an Austinite. Maybe there are no metrics. It happens when it happens. That's probably not super satisfying for Sarah, who asked this question. Or maybe it is.
I love those answers. Those are great. Those really resonate with me, you know, not being from the city, but wanting to become part of it. And I especially loved Mr. Dilworth's answer you know, you've been a fourth generation, your children are fifth generation. That's amazing that your family's been here that long. And just that, but that you're like including me and including everybody who's new to Austin and saying like, you know, if you don't want to be anywhere else, then, you know, welcome.
Were you hoping more of like a list or like a checklist or, you know, because I think the thing that we learned, it means different things to different people and that it's not a checklist. It's more of like a feeling, I guess.
Yeah. I think belonging is a feeling. I think you're exactly right about that. Like if it was a checklist, it'd be too easy. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, anybody can go and like get their picture taken with the murals, which I'm planning to do. And they can go see a UT football game, which I'm planning to do. And they can go eat barbecue at Franklin's Barbecue, which I'm planning to do. But, you know, I mean, if it was a checklist, it would be too easy.
So do you feel in some way more equipped to become a real Austinite, as the question said?
I do. And I've gotten to be on air, which is amazing. It's so special.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so awesome how welcoming everybody is, all the wonderful ideas that y'all have. And again, that it's part of making a commitment to the town, that you're here for the long run, you're here to appreciate the culture and the history. Like one of your listeners was saying, where she feels like, you know, there's all these ghosts of her past around town. And then to be able to really become part of the community and say, how can I make a difference in this community? How can I keep this town growing in really fantastic ways and really contribute and be a piece of the story?
Thanks to everybody for helping us answer Sarah's question. I know she appreciates it.
I love you guys.
And Sarah, good luck making your own ghosts. Matt Largy, KUT News.
That's KUT Weekend for the fourth weekend of December 2018. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org or just ask me on Twitter. I'm at KUT Nathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Happy holidays. Thanks for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. ¶¶